You know, nobody really likes the stewardship sermon, right? I mean, people probably don't even really like the stewardship campaign. And I really didn't want to give the stewardship sermon. You know, I have zero interest in talking to you about money, dollars, cents, all that. And I know you have even less interest listening to it. Because, one, I'm not a used car salesman for Jesus. I'm not trying to sell you a deal so that you can help make this church be something. I also refuse to use guilt. And I don't want to manipulate you into giving when you don't want to. What I want to do this morning is to simply share with you my vision of what this church can be. And then it's up to you to decide if that's a vision that you want to give to. And to begin, I want to take us all the way back to the beginning. You have not reached your journey's end, nor, I hope, have you even sighted your ultimate destination. There are still goals ahead of you, challenges to meet, and opportunities to seize. I know if your past be any indication of your future, the vision, the faith, and the work that have brought this building to reality will remain a dominant influence among you, and that you will not take your ease in this Zion that you have built, but will continue to lengthen your cords, strengthen your stakes, and enlarge the tent of your habitation. Bishop C.J. Kinsolving III on June 13, 1954. Those words were printed in the leaflet of the dedication of the original church. And I assume they were read aloud. They're auspicious words that those who gathered on that day to formally dedicate an open Trinity on the Hill heard. You know, that building, that Zion, still stands, having sometime been christened the St. Athanasius Chapel. You can go there after this service and run your fingers over the brick and mortar and see the altar that has served us for years. And if you are lucky, maybe you'll feel some of our founder's hope still reverberating in those walls. A hope that has been passed on to us, a hope that can carry us into a future of lengthened cords, strengthened stakes, and an enlarged habitation. But I need to tell you, hope is no promise. Hope is never a promise. It's not a guarantee. Hope is a response to the call that we have heard, a call from that somewhere beyond our own strength, beyond our own plans, beyond our own limited aspirations. Make no mistake, hope and goodwill, both of those things are no promises. Rather, hope is a response, and thus an opportunity to build brick by brick an incarnation of God's dream for humanity. To take the grit and the gristle of life, of your life, of your daily life, of your hopes and fears, joys, aspirations, to take all of that, to mix it with the drops of our sweat and the tears of all kinds, and to make a mortar that can bind together disparate and divided people into one beautiful, joyful whole. To make this hope more than just a luminous vision, to turn our hope into a grounded, fleshy reality, to do this, we must be a people of bravery. A people who stare boldly into an unwritten and unseen future and say, right here, right now, I will labor and share to see this vision come to pass. We must be a people who do not shirk back from the challenges we meet day in and day out. We must be a people of hope-infused bravery who see not challenges that threaten our future or maybe even threaten our present, but opportunities to realize the dreams of our founders, dreams that we believe were birthed in the heart of God. But even now, even at this very moment, I am haunted by something Bishop Kinsolving said those many years ago. You will continue to lengthen your cords, strengthen your stakes, and enlarge the tent of your habitation. It's a call to take this tent that we call our spiritual home, Trinity on the Hill, and stretch it out. Stretch it beyond our imaginations. Stretch it beyond what's comfortable for us. And believe that we can become a house of prayer for all people. A church in which there are no outcasts. A people sojourning together that pick up the wounded on the side of the road and nurse them back to health. A people that welcomes as their own those whom society has cast into the margins. A people that sing a song not unlike Hannah's song. The bows of the mighty are broken, but the feeble gird on strength. Those who were hungry are fat with spoil. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. Taking as our guide that rabble-rousing and table-turning rabbi, Jesus of Nazareth, the one that showed us that God takes great delight in subverting social norms and expectations. And if we're mobilized not by fear, but by a fearless faithfulness, we could be a tent so large, so broad, that nobody in this county feels isolated, tossed aside, or unvalued. And I don't even mean that rhetorically. If we as a church aren't going to dream big, then we don't need to be a church at all. What would it mean to be part of a movement in this county that makes sure there are no outcasts? Those who are brokenhearted can come here and be bound up. We can be a place where the feeble are girded in strength, where the hungry are fed, literally and spiritually. For those that who suffer from a poverty of resources would never fear living in destitution, but would always have their needs met by the love and generosity of their sisters and brothers. Roughly 354 people live in food insecurity in this county, and I know that this church could make sure no one ever goes hungry. We could. We can be a place where all have seats of honor, where there are no outcasts, where there are no castes at all, where we are constantly searching for new ways to remind people of their inherent dignity and worth. Imagine what our community would look like, would feel like, if we not only pass the peace every Sunday, but also say to each person on our left and on our right, you are a beloved child of God, beautiful to behold. And what if we actually meant it, right? In such a way that it wouldn't be mistaken for some kind of pro forma liturgical action, but was actually a celebration of everybody's inherent beauty and dignity? Imagine it for yourself, of what it would feel like for you to hear that every time you came. Imagine what a difference our community could make in this city. If we were the answer to those who might say, I'm transgender and my family kicked me out, who will love me as I am? The answer to those who might wonder, I'm an addict and I can't break the cycle, who will love me as I am? The answer to those who might say through tears, my faith is crushed and I've been betrayed by the church once before, who will love me as I am? And maybe you're thinking to yourself, stop it. Stop it with the hyperbolic hypotheticals. But you know, they're not hypotheticals. Those are things that have actually been said to me, that have been voiced to me on Main Street or at Starbucks, in conversations around playgrounds at town. It's great having a five-year-old. When I don't look like a priest, people get to sharing. And I ask them, you know, what church you go to? And then they'll spill it to me. But as soon as I tell them I'm a priest, they clam up. Because they know what priests do. Judge. Condemn. These are thoughts of real people crying out for an outstretched hand of love. And we, a people empowered by the unconditional love of God, a people whose founding vision was of a future of lengthened cords, strengthened states, and enlarged habitation, we can be the ones who offer those hands of love. Because we are Trinity. We are a people who have been united by grace, love, and mercy. We have found or are finding our place in God's story. And we want to help others find their place too. No matter who they are, no matter what they look like, no matter who they love or sleep with, no matter what pronouns they use, we are Trinity. No matter how rich, no matter how poor, no matter how full or hungry, no matter how socially honored or dishonored, we are Trinity. The mission of Trinity on the Hill is to share the power and joy of God's love, to fully embrace all of God's children, and to respond to the needs of our community and the world in the spirit of Jesus Christ. That's a big mission. But not impossible. We are here gathering to celebrate and share the power and joy of God's love. We at least vocalize the desire to embrace all of God's children. And we do a pretty good job of responding to the needs of our community. But let's go further. Let's build on the vision that has been with us since our beginning and this new mission that is carrying us forward. Let us embrace a new social norm, one that we named last week, a social norm that only has one tenet: proudly be yourself. Let us give ourselves, spend ourselves in the name of and for the sake of Jesus Christ, who said, "When I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself." Now let's pray for the day. You know, not even pray. Let's yearn, desire for the day. Desire it from the deep places of our souls for that day when the bodies that fill these pews reflect the incredible diversity and uniqueness of the human race. An enlarged tent of habitation that provides a safe haven for all. The church has done much to lose the trust of the people. Not necessarily our church, but the church as a whole. And we may not be able to turn the tide for the whole thing, but we can for this town. Not to mention the other 34 churches in town. If it was only us, we could still do it. Even if it was us, we could still do it. We could transform this county. It's funny, when I go to the AA meetings that I go to, and when people don't know that I'm a cleric, and afterwards, you know, they hear me do my shares, and afterwards, they say, "What do you do? I've never seen you at the lab." I say, "Oh, I'm a priest." And they say, "How is that possible?" And then I tell them where I serve, and they say, "Huh, if that church will have a priest like you, maybe I could go there." And it has nothing to do with me. I mean, y'all are the ones who call me, right? I'm just proudly being myself. You know, we have all of these dreams, and we bracket them because we fear failure. Trying something new and it fails. We fear that, so we don't. So we remain stagnant. This is not the time for stagnation. This is the time to dedicate ourselves, our lives, our livelihoods to this mission of being a house of prayer for all people. We are all baptized in the same water. We were all birthed the same way, and we all serve the same God. Anything that we put up to divide us, we're doing because we want to. So let's desire to tear those things down, to tear down those walls, to sing Hannah's song. But let's not forget that hope, it's not a promise. It's a response to a call to be something more than we are right now. An opportunity to build brick by brick an incarnation of God's dream for humanity. And the Spirit of Jesus of Nazareth, who inaugurated for us a new way of being in the world, I implore you, friends, to take your place in stoking the fires of this hope, keeping it alive for those who come after us. Amen.